May it please the court. My name is Jordan Factor, registration number 38126. I represent the appellant, Jack Hopkins. With me at council table is Matthew Wolf. I'd like to focus my argument on the question of personal jurisdiction over Yoneman Groenewald. That question comes to this court on de novo review and requires only that my client make out a prima facie case of jurisdiction. Here, the allegations of the complaint, the affidavit of Teresa Groenewald, and the affidavit of Jack Hopkins, together with certain admissions of the defendant, establish a reasonable inference of jurisdiction, which is all that's required under a prima facie showing. In considering the evidence, this court views the allegations of the complaint in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, and to the extent there's any conflict in the affidavits submitted by the parties, all conflicts are resolved in favor of my client. Last year, the Colorado Supreme Court, in the Foundation for Knowledge case, characterized this as a light burden intended only to remove those cases where personal jurisdiction is obviously lacking. And my client has met this light burden with respect to both specific jurisdiction and general jurisdiction. And I'd like to begin with specific jurisdiction. The complaint in this case asserts claims under both contract theory and tort theory, and specific jurisdiction ensues under both. First, with respect to the contract. The contract that's at issue, the contractual breach that's at issue, involved Yoneman Groenewald's promise to send certain goods into the state of Colorado. He, in fact, sent certain non-conforming goods into the state of Colorado.
Was he entering into a personal contract as a party to a contract, or was he representing a company? And it was indeed the company's obligation to do this, and you don't have jurisdiction over the company.
He is personally liable under the contract, Your Honor. First of all, the complaint alleges two contractual claims against him personally, an implied contract, number one, and promissory estoppel, number two. Moreover, the complaint sets forth an alter ego claim. The affidavit of Teresa Groenewald substantiates that alter ego claim by saying that beginning in 2001 or 2002, the company ceased complying with the requirements of Kansas corporation law and ceased paying its taxes. Therefore, at the time of contracting, especially under the standard where all allegations are taken as true and all reasonable inferences are read in my client's favor, at the time of contracting, Yoneman Groenewald was engaging personally in this contract together with his brother Dolly, and the corporate form was a nullity at that point.
And so, Mr. Factor, at the time of contracting, what would you say were the minimum contacts under the specific jurisdiction that were essential here?
Your Honor, in the Burger King case, the U.S. Supreme Court says you look at three things. You look at the prior negotiations of the parties, the contemplated future consequences of their negotiations, and the terms of the contract. Here, Yoneman Groenewald engaged in a series of telephone conversations with Jack Hopkins while Jack Hopkins was in Colorado, where he made certain promises that ultimately formed the contract between Mr. Groenewald and Mr. Hopkins. The future expectations of the parties was that the contract would contemplate the shipment of goods into Colorado. As the Archangel Diamond case says, you look at whether the defendant deliberately created continuing obligations with the state of Colorado at the time of contracting. At the time of contracting, Yoneman Groenewald in fact created those continuing obligations by agreeing to send goods into the state of Colorado. If the court has no further questions on the contract portion of the complaint, I'll move on to the tort. The tort in this case is a tort of either negligent misrepresentation or intentional misrepresentation. And again, it's the same constellation of facts. that when Yoneman Groenewald was on the phone with Jack Hopkins, while Jack Hopkins was in Colorado, he made material misrepresentations of fact. Jack Hopkins reasonably relied on those representations and reasonably relied by sending money, over $135,000, to Yoneman Groenewald from Colorado. And there's a whole host of cases that say that making negligent misrepresentations or materially misleading representations intentionally via telephone to the state of Colorado is sufficient for Colorado to invoke specific jurisdiction over the defendant. You have the First Horizon case, which had the same facts, the Classic Auto Sales case, the Marquest Medical Products case, and also last year's Foundation for Knowledge case. All of those involve that same scenario where the out-of-state defendant is making misrepresentations of fact via telephone, even if the subject of the misrepresentation involves some sort of res that's out of state. For example, in the Classic Auto Sales case, this involved the sale of a car that was located out of state. And the out-of-state defendant made material misrepresentations about the make and model of that car. And the plaintiff then traveled out of state and purchased that car out of state. Yet Colorado had jurisdiction because of the misrepresentations that were made.
What about the out-of-Africa case?
The out-of-Africa case, Your Honor, is readily distinguishable. It's distinguishable in the same way that the Van Schaack court distinguished African safari or safari adventure.
Whatever it is.
Something like that.
Seems awfully close.
Yeah, 7 years later. The difference is that the safari organization in that case engaged in two types of conduct that allegedly conferred jurisdiction. Number one, it placed advertisements in national magazines. And number two, it made some phone calls into the state of Colorado for the purpose of discussing the trip. What the Van Schaack court said is, number one, those advertisements, because they were in national magazines, were not directed specifically at Colorado. They were directed nationally. And number two, the phone calls did not establish a jural relationship between the parties. The representations made in the phone calls did not establish some sort of contractual relationship, which is what we have here. What we have here beyond that is, and again, the other safari case relates more to general jurisdiction and whether those were sufficient minimum contacts to be continuous and systematic under the rubric of general jurisdiction. And having advertisements in national magazines and a few phone calls didn't cut it. Here, in terms of general jurisdiction, we have Yoneman Groenewald having separate contractual relationships with 22 Colorado residents, making donations to the Colorado Safari Club for the purpose of generating business in Colorado, attending trade shows in Colorado, filming a television commercial in Colorado, having an interactive website where Colorado residents can interact in real time with his company. That's far more than you have in the other safari case, even if you analyze it under general jurisdiction. But under specific jurisdiction, where the cause of action itself arises from the contact between the defendant and the Colorado resident, in that case, it's well established that even a single act of contact with the state suffices, so long as the litigation arises out of that act of contact, and that's precisely what you have here. And if there's nothing further at this time, I'll reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
You want to make your argument on general jurisdiction?
I think I did. It's essentially that. It's those 22 contracts. It's the television commercial, the donation to the state safari club, and attending the trade shows and the interactive website, all of which show continuous and systematic contact, especially under the light burden that ensues on a prima facie showing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have about 5.5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. Good morning to the court. My name is Dan Delaney. I'm here on behalf of the defendants in the underlying action, with me as well as Joseph Murr. it's unusual to hear argument of counsel in this context, having just read the briefs and having seen the level of specificity present in the briefs as compared to the level of specificity present in the argument. I would ask the court to review the record and look at the record and see if anywhere in the record it can find a specific allegation that Yonaman Gruenwald, as opposed to Dobby Gruenwald or some other actor on behalf of the entity, made these particular representations. One of the complaints we make in the brief is that there is such a level of generality with respect to the allegations that are made about who did what, when they did it, and why they did it, that it certainly doesn't comport with the overall and overarching concern that Mr. Gruenwald's due process rights not be prejudiced by being brought to court from Alabama or Africa, where he spends a tremendous amount of time, here to Colorado. First, it's important, I think, to talk about the difference between Dobby Gruenwald, the entity, and Yonaman Gruenwald. There doesn't seem to be any attempt in the opening brief or even below to argue against the decision that Judge Lemon made with respect to CRCP 3A. CRCP 3A required that when they commenced this action via service of process, that they filed the complaint within a fixed period of time. The predicate for the dismissal of Dobby Gruenwald and the entity was 3A. Nothing else. Not a Rule 12 analysis, only the 3A analysis.
I think they're before us.
And to the extent that they are not, Judge, that's excellent. I appreciate that, and we can talk only about Yonaman Gruenwald. And the question for Yonaman Gruenwald is whether or not there is jurisdiction, whether or not there is personal jurisdiction in the state of Colorado as a consequence of something that Yonaman Gruenwald did in the past so as to overcome what I believe to be a relatively high burden to protect his due process rights.
Mr. Delaney, let me ask you, because all we have to look at is the documentary evidence that was presented on the issue of jurisdiction. So what does that say in particular to Yonaman?
It doesn't say much in particular to Yonaman with respect to Mr. Hopkins' allegations. As I said, they're nonspecific with regard to who did what, when. What Yonaman admits to with respect to his contact or lack thereof with the state is that he attended a trade show, the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, pursuant to his business, not trade shows, as I think Mr. Hopkins would have you believe. That he did not initially recollect having hunted on the continent of Africa with a number of Colorado residents, but that that may well be true, and I think for purposes of this analysis, you have to consider it true, that he hunted, or his entity, I suppose, hunted on the continent of Africa with 20-some folks. I'm trying to think what else he admits to. And that he
admits having conversations with Mr. Hopkins, does he not, about safaris to Africa?
Absolutely. He would flatly reject the contention that he promised to ship anything to
the it's the formation of the contract, and aren't you talking about the merits? I mean, they're going to have to prove that to somebody that there were these conversations and that these representations were made. But that goes to whether it was breached or not, not whether we have jurisdiction.
I think so, Judge. And certainly below, we didn't argue any of the myriad of merit arguments that we could have made. We limited the argument below purely to jurisdiction. I think under Rule 12, you have to take everything that they say is true. I think even under those circumstances, you don't overcome the due process requirement. That this individual has to do something, has to take some affirmative step in the specific jurisdiction context in order to expose himself to the jurisdiction of this court. And even if everything that Mr. Hopkins says, even if everything that Yonaman Gruenwald's ex-wife says is true, we don't think that that rises to the level of exposing himself to suit here. Some of the language in the cases says that the defendant should reasonably expect to be brought into the state and be subject to suit here. Under the circumstances, I don't think that anyone could reasonably expect to take a man hunting in Africa and then be hauled into court in Colorado.
Well, in today's modern technology, let's assume that I engage in a exchange of emails with your client about a trip to Africa, about a hunt, about whatever. And your client makes representations about we'll use our best efforts, or we have contacts and we think we can get your trophies back to you in Colorado, mm-hmm. and all those kinds of things. And so I contract with your client, and your client is in Africa, mm-hmm. okay? Not in Kansas or in Alabama. You're saying I can't sue him in Colorado?
I think it depends on the rest of the circumstances.
I've given you all the circumstances. I had conversations with him over the internet, in which resulted in a contract for me to take a trip to Africa and hunt something.
My argument would be no, Judge, that does not in and of itself expose one to suit in that remote forum. And I think the New Frontier case says that. I think that where you have a circumstance where, in this case, the contract is negotiated outside of the state, there really isn't anything required of either contracting party in the state, that the contract in and of itself is not enough to confer jurisdiction on the home state of the complaining party.
That makes it awfully easy for people to hide, doesn't it?
I don't know that it makes it easy for them to hide, because I think there are certain circumstances, if you look at the large picture, where if there were repeated contacts, if there were extenuating...
But there were repeated contacts with me.
There were repeated contacts with you alone. But
now I'm talking about specific, not general jurisdiction.
Fair enough. In the general jurisdictional context, in the specific jurisdictional context, I think there could be an argument that if you contract with an individual, that yes, you could be hailed to court in that particular state, but it's still subject to the overarching concern about due process. Does it offend the traditional notions of fair play and substantial justice? Are the minimum contacts present? I think if you read the brief of Mr. Hopkins, one might be led to the conclusion that we look at narrow factors and we look at narrow instances in isolation. I don't think that the Colorado long-arm statute was intended to create a narrowly focused analysis about whether or not someone has correctly pled a tort, for example. I think this court can easily imagine many instances of potential abuse where perhaps well-meaning litigants who are simply pleading in the alternative trample upon the due process rights of foreign litigants purely by virtue of having met the bare pleading requirement contained within the long-arm statute, that you allege that there is a tort here. We heard from Mr. Hopkins' counsel, we heard all about contract, 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 contract. We didn't argue the pre-economic loss rule below. We didn't think it was appropriate. Certainly that's a consideration. It would be were the court to find jurisdiction. This is a case about a contract, and we think that a contract alone does not convey jurisdiction absent other minimum contacts.
Well, how about the contacts that create the contract? I mean, the contract that I just made with your client was a result of negotiations over the internet while he was in Africa. And that matured into a contract. Now, I agree with you that just the contract itself might not, but what about the contacts? He knows he's contacting me, he knows I'm in Colorado, he wants to do business with me, and I accept his offer.
I don't know that merely contracting with a Colorado resident is substantial enough, absent any other factor, to convey jurisdiction.
Well, I'm totally agreeing with you, but I'm not relying on the fact that there's a contract. I'm relying on the fact that your client constantly contacted me, or we had, I want to make it sound like he's harassing me, but we had a large volume of interchange over the internet about this contract and ultimately entered one. That's the gravamen of it, it seems to me, in terms of both the tort and the contract claim.
And I think you're right, Judge, but I think it goes to the substantialness of those contacts. And that substantialness, if you will, and that, I may be conjugating that word wrong, but nevertheless, that's not present in this case. There isn't any argument about the fact, or perhaps there is, but my reading of the record leaves little doubt that this particular transaction was consummated in Nevada. It wasn't consummated in the state of Colorado. Mr. Hopkins met Mr. Grunwald, one of them, we're not sure which one, in Nevada. They discussed the issue. They came to an agreement. Mr. Hopkins flies to Africa. He apparently is so satisfied with the service that he receives in Africa. He goes again.
Again.
The next year. And we don't know the circumstances surrounding that particular negotiation. And I think it's important to put this in sort of a temporal context as well.
Second trip was not consummated in Nevada.
I don't know. And I think the record is devoid of any.
So this is the first time I've heard Nevada mentioned, so I assumed.
You'll find in the record that the initial, if my memory is correct, the initial contract was formed in Nevada.
Mr. Delaney, so what you're stating is there was more than a contract, but that more was not substantial enough to meet the requirement for specific jurisdiction?
I think that's exactly right. And I think it is a burden on an out-of-state defendant to have to travel to this forum. We don't disagree that Mr. Hopkins is free to go to the state of Alabama and sue Yoneman Grunewald. He is free to do that and perhaps should have done that. But we don't think that Yoneman Grunewald's connection to this particular state is substantial enough, especially in the face of a lack of specificity in the context of the underlying record about who did what when to support bringing him to court in this state. And the paramount concern is his due process rights. I think it does out-of-state litigants a disservice to to de-emphasize the due process protections that are built into all of these myriad cases. There are a couple of other issues I think that they're mentioning, at least for clarification of the record. Mr. Hopkins sued below for everything that he paid out of Africa to go to Africa, plus about $40,000 in interest. That ignores what the damage is allegedly here, or at least doesn't.
That's not a jurisdictional issue, is it?
It can be, because if you look at the effects test in Caller, you have to look at the impact of the alleged wrongdoing in order to determine whether or not those impacts, if you will, are substantial enough and impact the forum state enough to confer personal jurisdiction. As I understand it, the issue here is Mr. Hopkins didn't receive the animals which he shot in Africa. Not that he didn't get to hunt, not that he didn't get to go to Africa, but that he doesn't have them to hang on his wall. We don't know anything about who he paid for the taxidermy. We don't know anything about that. It's not in the record. But nevertheless, the effect here, the damage here, isn't the cost of a trip to Africa. It isn't $45,000 in interest. It's what the value of being deprived of the opportunity and ability to hang up the heads on the wall for a fixed period of time may have been. With my remaining time, there's a default judgment question in this case, and there's a waiver question in this case. It's fairly clear from the record that Judge Mullins, the original judge below, did not intend to enter default judgment. There's the word default judgment doesn't appear in his orders, and it's abundantly clear that Judge Lemon didn't think that Judge Mullins entered default judgment.
But there is a default entered.
Absolutely, Judge.
And if we were to remand it to the court, that default would remain there. I mean, you still have to overcome the default.
I think we still have to overcome the default. Given this court's oft-announced preference for resolving cases on the merits, and I think the trial court's position, at least that you can infer from the language of some of her orders, I don't think that default's going to be a barrier to litigating this case on the merits.
I don't know, but I mean, I agree with you. I don't think that she set aside the default.
But certainly, she did not err in proceeding with respect to the jurisdictional question rather than simply allowing Mr. Hopkins to win by default and then have a damages hearing without a question as to liability. As far as waiver, Mr. Hopkins' view of the law will put a tremendous burden upon litigants and their counsel to fully grasp, understand, and have all of the facts prior to taking any move in the case. In this case, what happened was counsel was retained. Counsel moved to vacate a hearing that was imminent, meaning a day or two away from the appearance. The first substantive defensive move made by the defendants in that case was to move to dismiss based upon jurisdictional grounds. I think my time is up. Thank you very much.
May it please the court. This is a contract that was negotiated over a series of telephone calls while Mr. Hopkins was in Colorado. And more than that, it was a contract that called for performance in Colorado. And beyond that, the record shows that Yahneman Groenewald shipped goods into the state of Colorado in attempted performance of that contract. So the state of Colorado is not...
Well, what is the problem? Your client didn't get all of the trophies or got the wrong trophies or what?
Both, Your Honor.
Both, okay.
Yes, he killed 8 animals on the safari. He got a smaller number of animals sent to him, and the ones that were sent were not the ones that he killed. Now, he paid $135,000 based on defendants' representations that not only would he have the opportunity to visit Africa or hunt in Africa, but he would have the satisfaction of displaying those animals that he personally killed in Africa. That's something that was valuable to him. That was something that defendants offered at a very high price, knowing that that particularly would have value for someone of Mr. Hopkins' set of interests. And that was the contract that was consummated between the parties. And this was a material breach of that contract.
Mr. Factor, Mr. Delaney was stating that while agreeing that there may be some contacts, there were not sufficient enough to defeat concerns of due process. And I'd like to hear you respond to that argument.
Yes. The reasonableness standard encompasses three areas of concern. Number one, what is the forum state's interest in the dispute? Number two, what is the plaintiff's interest in an efficient disposition of the dispute? And number three, what is the level of burden on the defendant to litigate in a foreign forum? And courts tend to address those with giving a lot of deference to a finding of minimum contacts. In fact, the Burger King case suggests that the onus is on the defendant to raise the specter of unreasonableness upon plaintiff's prima facie showing of minimum contacts, but here the state of Colorado has an interest in seeing that contracts that call for performance in Colorado are enforced, that contracts entered into by their citizens are enforced. Mr. Hopkins obviously has an interest in litigating in Colorado, and it would undoubtedly impose something of a burden on Mr. Groenewald to litigate this case from Alabama.
But the burden on Mr. Groenewald to litigate from Alabama is presumably not that much greater than the burden on you to litigate in Alabama.
That's correct, Your Honor. If there's nothing further, then I'll yield the balance of my time.
Thank you, sir. We thank both counsel for their briefs and argument. It's an interesting case. The case will be deemed submitted. A written opinion will issue in due course. That completes our docket for the morning. The court will be in recess subject to call, and the bailiff may so announce.
All right. Be in recess subject to call.